Well, we're going to chat tennis now. And as I said, Stephen Higgins joins us in studio. He's been at Roland Garros this week. Lots of talking points in the men's and women's. Djokovic in the men's, obviously going for the record 23rd Grand Slam title, is a big talking point. Are injuries likely to impact on him now over the next few days?
It was fascinating. I watched his last two matches and both first sets went the same way, where he seemed perturbed by everything, unhappy with the court. I think in one of the matches, it seemed like his tail was taken. He's just giving out about everything, complaining to his team, still won. He's not playing that great at the moment. Coming in, he missed a lot of tournaments with his own injury issues, a bit like I've seen Nadal, who's missing Roland Garros for the first time since 2004. So he's not at his optimum level. We all know what he's capable of once it gets to the crunch moments, particularly in tie breaks and important matches. He can raise us to a level that's obviously the highest we've seen in men's tennis. I would have a bit of question, though, about Carlos Alcaraz. Is really the man of the moment at the moment, the world
he's
number one.
He's the 20-year-old Spaniard.
Yeah, and he's had a super season since he came back from injury in February. His four titles, three of them on clay. He has beaten all the guys. He didn't get to play Federer, but he's beaten the other guys. And he's in super form. I watched him one of the other nights, and he just looks brilliant and terrific. And, you know, a 16-year age gap. I think Djokovic will have to play a lot better, which we know he's capable of, but to compete with how well Alcaraz is playing.
I hadn't thought of it that way. A 16-year age gap, that's huge, isn't it?
Yeah, well, you know, eventually it takes its toll. As we've seen, obviously, Federer, you know, was able to survive well beyond what people expected when he was still competing at 40. Sadly for Rafael Nadal, it seems like time has kind of crept up on him, where he's skipping the rest of the season or as much as possible to recover.
He's won France, what, 14 times?
14 times, yeah. I think, Des, it's probably fair to say that in terms of sporting statistics, Rafael Nadal's 97% winning record at Roland Garros might be the best sporting statistic of them all.
How many matches would that be, roughly?
Well, it's 7 matches per Grand Slam. So 84 wins and about 3 losses, I think. But he's astonishing, and it is like it is lacking him. It's kind of, when you see it, it's sad at Roland Garros without him. But it's a great opportunity for people like Carlos, people like Djokovic, people like Holger Rune.
All right, so you based on the first week, you're going with the younger man.
Yes, I think Alcaraz will win. The top half will come down to probably a showdown between Djokovic and Alcaraz in the semifinals.
Aryna Sabalenka's press conference has gained an awful lot of publicity. And remind people who might be following closely, you were at it. Remind people the background to it.
Yeah, so as you might imagine, in tennis, there are very high-profile Ukrainian, Russian and Belarusian athletes. So they have to compete against each other still. Obviously, the Russians and Belarusians are allowed to compete, but they don't have the flag and the nationality listed. So as was documented well before, Aryna Sabalenka was playing Martia Kostyuk, a Ukrainian player. She wouldn't shake hands with Sabalenka, whatever the result was afterwards. Some of the crowd seemed to not really know that that was the case. Now, the French crowd like to get involved, whatever the circumstances anyway. But when Kostyuk politely refused to shake her hands, there was heavy booing from the crowd. Sabalenka went out to kind of, you know, serenade the crowd and was uncomfortable then because it was such heavy booing as Kostyuk left the court. Afterwards, Sabalenka was asked about it somewhat directly by a Ukrainian journalist about her real thoughts about the war. She said, you know, if she could do anything to stop it, she would. We're only athletes. But that journalist followed up then after her second press conference and was more direct, talking about links between Sabalenka and Lukashenko and support. And Sabalenka kind of cut that off altogether. I have no comment for you, she kept saying. Then after her third match, she didn't do a press conference at all in a traditional sense. She just did a pool with a few selected journalists. So the controversy, I mean, there's a lot of stuff going on in that. Yeah. One thing, if you think back to Naomi Osaka, who wouldn't do her press conference at Roland Garros, got fined, and then was under so much scrutiny and pressure about it, she actually left the tournament after her first match. Whereas now it seems, with the agreement of the French Tennis Federation, Sabalenka was able to skip her press conference and not speak about it. But you've also got very high profile Ukrainian players like Elena Svitolina, who's just back from having a child, who is raising money for Ukrainian kids, has donated her money from Strasbourg and plans to do the same with Roland Garros. And she criticised the rubbish that's spoken about the conflict and how there isn't proper dealing with it.
It's interesting, isn't it? Because a lot of sports people are urged not to get involved, that it's don't get involved in politics, it's sport, and then others want sports people to, because they have a platform that others don't have.
Yeah, well, if you think about it as well with tennis, it's particularly famous for going back through Billie Jean King, Althea Gibson, Martina Navratilova. Iga Swiatek is quite a campaigner for it as well. She wears a tie pin for Ukraine and speaks about it every time she has a match, encouraging people to support. I think...
Are the women more outspoken than the men?
Yeah, I think, yeah. On this issue, I think but the women have had to be more outspoken because the women have been trying to gain equality ever since the start of the tour.
Yeah.
And it was such a challenge for Billie Jean King and the original nine players to actually get professionalism for the women's tour. So it's not a surprise that they would be more outspoken about it.
That's right. Djokovic, though, came out, he went over to a camera, didn't he, but, and signed the peace in Kosovo over the Serbian conflict. He made a reference to that, and he was... Was he fined or slapped on the wrist?
See, they were trying to get a hold of that in the press conference. There was just a statement released to the press saying that he was spoken to, or the relevant person was spoken to. So it's not very clear whether he was fined or disciplined.
What was his comment? Was a Kosovo?
He basically, on the camera, after matches, players often sign the lens with a message. Yeah, so he signed that Kosovo is a part of Serbia, or is at the heart
of Serbia.
And there's ongoing issues there.
Yeah.
Kosovo declared independence, I think, in 2008. The Serbian government don't recognise that. It's very Djokovician to, he mentioned that even in his press conference, that he can't really get through a Grand Slam without some sort of controversy.
Is cranky Djokovic... Djokovic at his best, nearly.
Yeah, I think he needs that fire.
Yeah.
He thrives on the crowd being against him. I always think back to, say, the 2019 Wimbledon final against Roger Federer, where it's fair to say 99% of the crowd wanted Federer to win.
Yeah.
And somehow he actually mentioned that, he referenced that in one of his press conferences in Roland Garros, of how those matches were statistically he lost in every category, but he won the match.
It's funny, isn't it, how mentally some people... Keith, even in football, some people, players or managers, thrive on, you know, everyone hates us.
Yeah, I think always the best teams have that in them. When you look at Fergie with the United team, he had very much backs against the wall, it's the world against us type of mentality. Yeah. And obviously that's not true, but if you can put that into your players' heads, it's the rest against us. It just breeds that dog and that dog in this fight. And like you say, you can be second best in most categories, but just find a way to get over the line. It's brilliant, and I have to say I love watching Djokovic play. I wouldn't be a huge tennis fan, but you can just tell, even from a casual observer like me, that Djokovic is super, super talented.
But tennis has a history of those who get the crowd against them and thrive, hasn't it?
Yeah, you're thinking you're John McEnroe.
Exactly. Well, McEnroe's the obvious one.
Actually, Daniel Medvedev's a bit like that. He takes on the crowd as well. He had interesting exchanges with US fans where he was taking on the New Yorkers when they were booing him and embracing it. There's certain players. Andy Murray needs to be fired up as well in his own way. Very different to the serenity of someone like a Federer or Nadal, of course. But, you know, Serena as well liked a bit of spice in her matches to kind of get herself going. Yeah. They all need their own different, I suppose, special sauce to get the juices and the adrenaline going to compete.
All right, then let's look ahead then. You've hinted you think Alcaraz is the man in the men's.
Alcaraz is the man to beat at the moment, particularly with the level Djokovic has, with the proviso that Novak Djokovic has won 22 majors and his level is probably the greatest we've ever seen in the men's game. So of course he has the capability to improve and match it. But as they're going at the moment, I would have Alcaraz as the favourite for the men's.
And in the women's?
In the women's, we've had a couple of withdrawals and losses in terms of Elena Rybakina, surprisingly the Wimbledon champion, withdrew this morning citing illness. So she's one of the three women who are kind of have separated themselves at the top of the women's game. So Iga Swiatek, Elena Rybakina and Aryna Sabalenka. So she's now out of the top half, which is great news for Swiatek. Jessie Pegula, who's the world number three, she also lost early on. It's basically a case of Swiatek in the top half, Sabalenka in the bottom half. You would maybe expect that to be the final on form. They've played a number of finals already this year. But you never quite know, because in best of three, players are vulnerable. I was just looking there. Swiatek is cruising along at the moment anyway. She looks very good now. She's going for her third Roland Garros title, which would equal the likes of Monica Seles and Serena. This is her best tournament by far. She's incredibly comfortable here. She is magnificent on clay courts. So you would expect her to be in the final, particularly now that Rybakina isn't in the mix.
All right. And in the final, should be hard to beat.
Yeah, and I suppose I should mention, because my mathematical skills let me down earlier, that it's Nadal's record is 112-3 at Roland Garros.
112-3, yeah. I had I had multiplied the 7 by 14 and come up with a different figure. But that's probably one of the most amazing,
I think it's
stats in sport.
I kind of argue it's almost the best stat in sport, and it will be impossible to ever replicate. I can't imagine in my lifetime someone winning 14 or 18.
And Stephen, people who want to keep following your commentary on tennis.
Yeah, actually, the best thing you could do is you could sign up for my newsletter, which is free and very informative.
It is very informative. Monday. It keeps me informed.
And crosscourtview.com.
Crosscourtview.com. Yeah. Okay, it's well worth it if you're into tennis. Or if you're like Keith, you watch it occasionally and like to know who's doing what, it's well worth doing. Stephen Higgins, thanks very much for coming in.